All right. And I want to say Boker Tov, Shavua Tov to those listening. I want to dedicate today's Shir, Sagadol Nafal B'Yisrael, Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin. And I knew him. I know him many decades. I yet knew his grandfather, Rav Yosef Elio Henkin. His uncle was actually my balabas in Lower Merion, his famous uncle, who was a professor of international law at Columbia University, a visiting professor at the University of Pennsylvania. And Yehuda Herzl was a self-made Talmud Chacham. He went to Flatbush, then came to Kerem Biavna, and when he saw in Kerem Biavna how much the Israelis know and how little an American kid who graduated Flatbush knows, he spent many years afterwards just sitting and learning. He did graduate Columbia University, spent a lot of time with his grandfather. And when I came in Aliyah soon afterwards, I met him. He was the Rav of the Beit Shan Valley area for the Moatzah HaDatit. And I remember people from the kibbutz, I think it was Steliyahu, saying to me, all right, he's a Talmud Chacham, but they said to me, his wife, what a personality, what an ishiyut. And as you know, Hannah Henkin changed the world, and her husband was her posek, I would say partnership. What she did, you can't say Hannah Henkin without saying Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin. He authored four very important volumes, Shedel Shuvt B'nei Bonim, which deal with problems that are ours in the religious Zionist world. He didn't run away from any problems, problems of modernity, problems of feminism, problems of religious Zionism. I'll tell you something sad. You know, I'm working on a major piece now dealing with Das Torah and contemporary issues. I'm putting together a lifetime of thought on this particular matter. And I took out Chelik Gimel of his four volumes. I have all four volumes, Shetel Shivet B'nei Bonim, which is a reference to his grandfather that he's here today because he's a grandson of Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin. And just as I'm about to open the volume, I got the news that he died. As a matter of fact, my next door neighbor told me he just came back from a funeral. I looked at him, what funeral? Of course, YU had not notified us of anything, and he said, Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, and I couldn't believe it. There's the volume on my desk. I'm actually started writing on Thursday, Friday, quoting from his tshuva that I need for the idea I'm developing. It deals with the Rav, it deals with demonstrations for Russian Jewry. It's a very powerful, insightful tshuva that fits right into what the thoughts that I'm developing. But I just want to say, Skutoya Genoleinu, and we should dedicate the Shir and Meisim Tovim in his memory. He need not tell you what that family has gone through. Great success. But on the other hand, imagine his daughter-in-law and son, Rav Eitan, who evidently was a terrific Talmud Chacham and also had historic understanding and left so much in manuscript. The young man, some of it has been published on the Aruch HaShulchan. I spoke about it in class at the time. And Nebuch killed by Arab terrorists, supported by the European Union. It's beyond comprehension what the world we live in, following the Shoah, the Holocaust. And all the more do we have to say thank you, in my opinion, to Donald Trump. I know all the critiques of him. But nevertheless, from our point of view, my point of view, the man was wonderful to the Jewish people and to the state of Israel, and he should go mechayil el chayil. Jack, you asked the question about the Knesset and the World Zionist Organization. Basically, they're exactly the same. The only difference is that the Knesset has judicial power. It's a state. The World Zionist Organization is voluntary. But both of them represent the Jewish people, the Knesset, the State of Israel, which essentially is a Jewish state, although it's a democracy. And the World Zionist Organization represents what Chazal say, that everyone has Dalet Amot Beretz Yisrael. If you've studied the sugya of Kinyan Agav, where do we have land to make a kinyan agav karkar? It's the dalet amot we have in Eretz Yisrael. All right, go and argue with the Misrad HaPnim. I want my dalet amot. All right, that's a question what they're going to give you. But Baruch Hashem, we all have dalet amot, and the World Zionist Organization, and I stand on what I said. If from Jews can sit in the Knesset, they can certainly sit in the World Zionist Organization as well. What you're trying to index the material, Jack, that sounded great to me, what you're able to do. Now the question is, find someone who has 7 years to sit down and listen to 1,600 Sheyurim and come up with the system you have developed of indexing La Yehuda Maita Ora V'Simcha. I was just asked by a very prominent person in America about the Rav and Mizrahi and Aguda, and I've devoted over 1,000 hours to it, but go find it. That's the problem, halacha lemaisa. All right, I want to just pick up with, Jack, I still owe you one answer. Remind me tomorrow, Rabbi Young and Rabbi Soloveitchik. Very interestingly, what we've spoken about, bringing a fan into the sukkah, so Rabbi Grinstein sent me an interesting story. One year he went to visit Rabbi Yehuda Amital, his Rebbe, from Alon Shvut and Cholom Moed Sukkos. And in the sukkah, he asked him, do you have to bring a fan into the sukkah? Of course, it can be very hot in Israel, sukkah's time. And Rabbi Amital said, no, mitztayer patam in a sukkah, you're not obligated to do extraterritorial matters to bring in a fan. And Rav Grinstein said the only problem was that while he was answering him like that, behind him was his bed in the sukkah, and right next to it was a fan. So a bit nervous, Rabbi Grinstein asked him, but why do you have a fan in the sukkah? And he told him, I can't fall asleep at night, I need the fan. Evidently it had to do with Holocaust survivor, who at night would have nightmares, which some of you who know was a common result of the Holocaust for those who went through it. But nevertheless, halacha lemaisa, what he was doing was lifnim mishurat hadin. I also want to thank Rabbi Grinstein. I don't know how he does it on all these topics we mentioned. He has sheets with all the sources. When your wife lights for you. And what I said was correct, very correct. There's a big difference between Shabbos candles and between Hanukkah candles. Hanukkah candles are a devar mitzvah, it's a kiyum. You can't have anar from them. Ein on reshut lishtamesh behem, el rotnum bilvad, kedei laholtad lahalcha, shimcha gadol. Shabbos candles, the more the better, the light, shalom bayit, oneg, covered v'oneg, Shabbat. And ein hachinami, and we alluded to this, and I don't want to elaborate, a lot has been said already. Rav Heschel evidently feels, Rav Heschel Shechta, evidently feels that Friday night when a woman lights, first she should turn on all the lights in the house, and then she lights candles, because the hana we have are not from the Shabbos candles, but Eli, they're from generally lighting up the house. My own feeling is, and I said this in Baruch Shekivantes, Yerub Shlomo Zalma, Orbach says the same thing, that the lighting of candles, I would say, represents the fact that all our preparations for Shabbos are done. The house is lit up, the food is ready, everything. We're ready, likrat kalah, to welcome the Shabbos bride. And therefore, there's a kiyum in itself of lighting candles. That itself is the culmination of all our preparations. So I wouldn't drive my wife crazy. I actually turn on all the lights myself. And Malka will ask me, is everything done? Can I light candles? The only thing I haven't done is I haven't turned the elevator on yet to be automatic. And when she lights candles, she can't do it, but I do it on my way down to shul. With Yontif Sheni, there's a real machloket, because since the house is already lit up, what good do your candles do? And there I know Reb Heschel, I don't want to say he asks, but halacha lemaisa, if people ask him, he'll tell them, Yontif Sheni, not to light candles. A lot of people were upset with the psak. And again, others, Reb Shlomo Zalman and others say that lighting candles, this is the woman's responsibility. So you add a drop more light, but it's more than just adding a drop more light. It's saying we're ready to accept the second day Yontif. Okay, that's in relation to lighting candles. Yontif Sheni, Rav Shlomo Zalman. We mentioned, we got the question about being called into Lashlim Minyan for Hasidim who are davening well after Shkia Mincha. So I passed La Halacha, and I think I'm on safe, on terra firma, on safe ground. We can join the Minyan, even though we would be davening Marv at the time, but right, the Chassidim, they're here to stay, Shitat Rabbeinu Tam. We can't change the world. The Vilna Gaon lost the battle, and we're more than 200 years later, and we certainly have lost the battle Bisman Hazeh. So Nachum Lam wrote to me that one time his class was meeting with Rabbi Norman Lam, president of Yeshiva University, and Rabbi Lam said, "What do you do in a situation like this that you're walking around college campus and someone with a kippah comes out and says, come join us, we need a minyan for mincha. And you come into the room and there are three men there and six women and you're the tenth. And that's a million times more difficult question than joining Chassidim. And Rabbi Lam says, You have to be very diplomatic in a situation like that. You have to stand firm on halacha. Obviously, you have to explain to them, but you have to be diplomatic, not to be too extreme in your response. But all right, that's a fascinating question. And finally, a student of mine for many, many years, first in BMT and now via Zoom, Stuart Pilichowski, writes to me, before making Aliyah at the end of 1999, I worked in an office building in New Jersey. And that year, we said Shehiyanu every night of Hanukkah. What is he? And he explains that they decided people have to say Kaddish, they don't get home till later, Shabbos, sunset is early, so they made a minyan in the building. Since they had a minyan, they lit Hanukkah candles. Every night some new people joined them. Oh, this is something, Jews, Hanukkah candles. And lo and behold, every night there was a Jew there who had not lit Hanukkah candles that Hanukkah. So they wound up every night hearing and making a Shehiyanu. All right, with that, I have one more thing I wanted to mention, but we can leave that for later. All right. Let's get back to work here, or back to learning, I wouldn't call it work, back to the joy of investigating Torah Hashem Tamima. And we're talking about Hanukkah, again, these are simple topics, it seems, prima facie, and Ein Hachinam, you'll open up the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and it'll tell you exactly what to do. But Halacha L'maisa, you come up with endless questions. And one of them was traveling to Baltimore, and suddenly you're on the highway, and it's time to light Hanukkah candles, and evidently you're not going to reach your destination till well after midnight. And Rav Menashe Klein felt you could pull over, safe place, light Hanukkah candles. Halacha l'maisa, I don't really know how you can do it, because you're right. I said going to a Howard Johnson's, but I don't know how happy they're going to be with someone lighting Hanukkah candles. It is a sakana. People see light candles, pull over the side of the highway. What are you going to light on top of the car? Wait there a half hour. Halacha l'maisa, I don't know what Rabbi Menashe Klein would propose. But in theory, he felt you should light Hanukkah candles on the way to Baltimore. The next tshuva we did, which to me is fascinating, because you're getting involved here with a whole attitude towards women and the halacha. And here we're on a very, I would say, it's like walking on ice. You have to be very careful. And Rav Menashe Klein, and I can't go into details now, but I will someday, he was not exactly the most pro-feminist individual, and for good reason. He personally suffered in his personal life very much from what his first wife did to him. How do I know all these details? Unfortunately, I went through exactly the same situation with a very dear student, I would say, not just my student, she was like a daughter, because she grew up with my daughters in Essex County, and later she was my student at Mechala, Debbie Zichrona Levracha, no longer alive, and she went through the same Agmas Nefesh in reverse with Reb Menashe Klein's son from his first marriage. So there are reasons why he could be very negative. But here, this woman is in the office in London, and she can't get home for Lichtbenchen, Hanukkah candles, and her father asks, should he wait for her, or should he light with Zman and be have Kavana Lahotzi Ota? And from their world, evidently, women did not light their own candles. And Reb Menashe Klein Paskin La'alacha, very, here it would be exactly what I would Paskin, you wait for your daughter. The Bisman Hazeh will come to it. You're allowed to light all night, basically, as long as people are awake. And there's no sense making your daughter feel second rate or feel like an outcast that she's not there for the Hanukkah candles. She has to work. It's interesting, I'd like to know where she works, what her work is, who her boss is. And if you recall, it brought me back to Carol Burnett's sketch of Mrs. Wiggins, which is one of the call of Carol Burnett, the people who say she's fabulous. All right, she was very capable and very artistic. But to me, the Mrs. Wiggins one is the best. And that brought me back the minute they say she works in an office. But it could be a big difference if she's a secretary or if she's a medical doctor, a nurse. It could be an accountant could be. You should tell her, finish your medical practice a little early those days, finish your accountancy practice, and go home and join your parents for Hadlakat Neirat. The next question, and that's where we left off at the end of the last shiur, is again a reflection of modern times, Jews in jail. And here I can tell you something very fascinating. When I started my work of my research on my doctorate, Mrs. Revel opened up to me the files that her husband left in their home in the Broadmoor Hotel, 102nd Street and Broadway in New York. And this was wonderful. I had files, I had documents. And then in the yeshiva, they told me as well, there's some barrels downstairs. I think they're ready to throw them out. And I looked around there too. So on my committee, Dr. Lander was the chairman of the committee, but there was also Dr. Duker, Abe Duker, and Sidney B. Honig. So Sidney B. Honig, who grew up in the yeshiva, was part of the yeshiva, knew everything about the yeshiva, said to me, you're going to find documents on a Jew that went to jail. Those can never be published. It'll embarrass the yeshiva. And Ein Hachinami, I did find the documents. Was a Jew who pleaded with Rabbi Revel to contact the authorities that he should be allowed to keep his beard on in jail. And that's what it was about. That was the correspondence. And I've always thought to myself, imagine in the 1920s or the 1930s, this was considered a shander, a chaper, a disgrace for the Jews. Today you'll find minyanim, they wouldn't let me in to be part of the minyan in jail because I don't have a beard, you follow? Today in jail and no one's ashamed. But boy, was this a shanda. So this tshuva is written, he doesn't give the name obviously, but the question of Neirot Hanukkah, it was written, I can tell you, the year 1990. And it's written to a big rav, and he praises him from Tel's yeshiva. And this rav was approached by someone in jail, and he wants to light Hanukkah candles. He's evidently a frum person, or at least frum, depends on what he was in jail for, but let's say ritually observant, we'll use that word. And the God tells him, you can light the candles, but I'm going to blow them out 1 minute after you light. And here, of course, you have the question, lighting Hanukkah candles, api halacha, they have to burn for half hour. What happens if you had enough oil that they could burn for 5 hours, but something happened and they blew out? Me'ikah hadin, you don't have to relight them. Is hadlaka osa mitzvah? It's a sugya in the Gemara in Shabbos, but me'ikah hadin, once you light them, if it has enough oil to burn for a half hour, you're yotzei. But here the problem is that the person is standing there ready to blow them out. So you're lighting, you taka have enough oil, or you have the candles, everything is perfect, but there's one problem. The God says he will blow them out. So this is the heart of the question. And you see, Reb Menashe Klein says, it's not like a sudden wind will come along. It's not something that you can't control. Here you're dealing with a human being. He has choice. Maybe he will blow it out. Maybe he won't blow it out. Maybe he'll see you lit, you're happy, you made a blessing. You know, Gentiles do respect in America, in God we trust. There is a basic respect for religion, at least there used to be. Who knows, with the new liberality and the, what goes on the campuses, we don't know what's going to happen. The day can come in America where they'll take off "in God we trust" off the coins, off the dollar bills, etc., etc. Anything is possible. But here, you don't know for sure. On the other hand, it could very well be the law of the jail. You can't light in jail. Everyone is worried about a prisoner doing damage to himself, damage to the jail. And here, where the Gentile is standing there, and he says, "I certainly am going to blow the candles out." He says, it could very well be, you're not yotzei, you're not allowed to make a bracha in such a case, even if you light. And he says, could be, the etzo we should give the Jew is tell your wife to light for you at home, what his home was, where his home was. Reb Menashe Klein doesn't deal with someone who doesn't have a wife, but tell your wife to light for you. You'll be yotzei me'ikah hadin. Psychologically, remember we spoke about this last week, there are two concepts to the candles. One concept is all of us have to light, all our homes have to be lit up. All right, that's one concept. The other concept is, if I see the lights, even if I didn't light, I have to remember the neis, and I can make a bracha, perhaps make a bracha, shasa nisim labotenu. There are two different concepts here. One, the actual lighting with all the rules, your home, buy it, ishu beito. And the other one is pirsumi nisa. So he says, let the convict light. He won't make a bracha, but at least he'll see the candles for a minute. There'll be some pirsumi nisa. And then if the person blows out, he doesn't have to worry. Ein hachinami, he's not yotzei by lighting. His wife, the home that he left, if there's a daughter there, if he had friends, fellow gangsters who were still not in jail, let them light. But he can light too. It can be blown out. But at least there'll be a certain amount of pirsumei nisa. And that's what he would paskin l'halacha. And he says, and after all, this person is an ones. He's in jail. Ones rachmana patre. And that takes us back, if I can put into parentheses, a Devar Torah that I think you've heard from me over the years, but it still inspires me. That's exactly ones rachmana patre. That's the story in the 1950s. Perhaps 54, 55, the word was out that something great is happening in Crown Heights, there's a young Rebbe who really has a message. And we went out, a whole group of us from YU, we went to 770. Now, a chassid would say the Rebbe with Ruach HaKodesh knew that there were a group of YU guys there. Could very well be the Gabbai whispered him, because they saw a group of kids that weren't there before, and we were, you know, MTA kids, Manhattan Talmudical Academy, and someone whispered to the Rebbe, this is da Gruppe from Yeshiva University, from the high school. Someone whispered in his ears, very possible, but I'll never forget. The Rebbe looked right at us and he said, thank God, we have to thank the Almighty that the Maccabim were chassidim and not litvakim. And we all looked up and he said, imagine had it been litvakim. They would have come into the Beis HaMikdash. They would have found one cruse of oil. They knew that it took 7 days to go get more oil. 3 days, the Rambam explains, 3 days to go up north. 1 day is Shabbos, 3 days to come back. They would have said, why should we light candles? We have to wait 7 days. We have to get kosher oil. Ones rachmonei patrei. If the Litvaken had been Maccabim, if they had been Litvaken, there would have been no miracle of Hanukkah. But Baruch Hashem, the Maccabim were chassidim. They said, min daf nisht machin cheshbonis. We don't have to make cheshbonot. I don't know how to say that in English. Ones rachmona patre, and therefore God, no chas v'chalila, mitzvah haba liyotcha, al tachmitzena. And they lit candles, and Baruch Hashem, this is how we have Hanukkah, a tremendous miracle that the candles lasted until the new oil came. And this is the whole holiday of Hanukkah. So all right, this is the Lubavitcher Rebbe's fault. But when you come back to the guy in jail, it really is Ones Rachmana Patre. Now, then he writes about something, and boy, I hope it's not true. He says he is very much in doubt whether these people who fly on Hanukkah are doing the right thing when they surreptitiously light candles on the plane in the middle of the flight. Shemadlikin beginneva, that's his expression. In English, I'll translate it surreptitiously. And you have to remember that it's a sakonet nefashat. How do you light candles? And since you're lighting candles under such conditions, when the minute they see them, they're going to tell you to extinguish it, you don't mekayim the mitzvah. There's no half hour that they're burning. And he says, I don't want to lo arich b'zeh, but he says, I absolutely feel that you're not yotzei and it should not be done. Now, I flew once on Hanukkah, and I told you, and this is where we're all in debt to Chabad, whether we like it or not, they have their role, they have carved out a niche, a certain role that only Chabad can play. And by the way, the Israeli government appreciates it, the Mossad appreciates it. I can tell you inside stories, it's not for now. But they play a terrific role in our religious life. And I remember it was the old JFK airport, where, how many of you remember when El Al had its own little binyan, its own little place where you sat, where you waited, separate from everyone else for security reasons? I am very uncomfortable when I come to JFK today and El Al is right among everyone else, and a big deal, so there's security people walking around. As Malkar always says, so they'll be able to get to the body first. Big deal. They'll shoot you, start shooting, so then they'll kill the terrorist. But in the meantime, who knows how many the terrorists could have killed like they did in Los Angeles airport. But one time, El Al was totally separate. So I remember distinctly, as they're getting us ready and announcing we're to leave their little area, the plane is ready to board, and there's security all over. You don't walk out plane, you walk out with security. I remember Chabad all set up with endless tables, and we lit candles. It was after the Plag HaMincha, And this was their psak. Of course, you know, is it your home? The truth of the matter is, that is your home at that moment. You have no other home. You're flying. They said to make a bracha as well, as I recall. And it was very, very moving. And I was very thankful, because it's a very difficult feeling to feel that you haven't lit Hanukkah candles. And this is the story he tells. This is halacha lemaisa. And he ends off the tshuva. Yes, he's in jail. He's anus, onus, rachmane, patre. But he understands, me'ika hadin, if his wife likes for him, he is yopse. But he wants to see the candles. Could be even for a half minute, there's a kiyum of some sort of pesume nisa. And that's what we were talking about. Rabbi Grinstein mentioned that Tzomet has come up with these way to light Shabbos candles and with electricity and Hanukkah candles. And it could be if someone can carry a little Hanukkah menorah on the plane that works with just candles with a battery, could very well be this Akim of Pesume Nisa. You're not Yotzei that lucky. I wouldn't make a bracha on it. But Zeichel Adava, it certainly is. All right. A medley of tshuvot. Another tshuva. Siman, and by the way, let me give the source. A Talmud here in Gruss asked me in the Beis Medrash for, I told him, Rabbi Nasha Klein discusses women Megillah reading, and he said, do you know the source? I said, by heart, I don't know. I'll have it in front of me, I'll tell you, but I can't walk around. I don't have Rabbi Lichtenstein's memory. But the first tshuva we quoted was Chelek Yud Aleph, Siman Tuf Kuf Lamed Gimel. Jack, am I saying it right? Kuf, Kuf Lamed Gimel. The one now is one second. It's Tuf, it's Siman, it's the same volume. Chelek Yud Aleph, Siman Tuf Kuf Lamed He. Tuf Kuf Lamed He. And here too is a question from life. And you know, you'd like to know more details about the people, but this is fascinating. This girl is left alone in her house. Her parents are in Eretz Yisrael, went to visit Israel for Hanukkah. And Bat Gedola, she's over 12, she's mechuyevet and everything. And the parents told her, you're not to light Hanukkah candles in the house. All right, why? Probably the girl was a teenager. The parents might have been survivors from Europe who hovered over their children. An American parent, a kid, a girl of 15, 16, she can conquer the world. I don't know, I have my daughters, I would have total confidence in them. But the parents said, you're not to light Hanukkah candles in the house. So Hanukkah's approaching, and the girl wants to know what to do. And she asked the Rav that could she go to her girlfriend's house and light candles, be part of her girlfriend's house. Either she could light candles, or she can contribute. We'll come to that halacha. The halacha is, it's an open gemara, that you can contribute. And if you, let's say you put 10 cents in, so you have a share in the Hanukkah candles, then you yotzei. And that's what the girl wants to know. And of course, this takes us back to the whole question of what's your home? Where do you light? And this question is not simple. I'll give you sources, we'll come to it again, but to just itemize what the question is, how do you judge someone's home? I'm traveling, I'm invited out, we're always in motion. Me'ika hadin you probably can determine what the home is by where you sleep at night. Where you sleep, typically, because eating, for the sake of argument, you're in a hotel. So you're eating out, you go Cafe Rimon, Atara, there's somebody, Atara doesn't exist anymore, I'm behind the times, but that's 40 years ago, the nicest cafe in the center of Jerusalem is Cafe Atara. There are many places you can go, you can eat, but that's not your home. But when for the sake of argument, you have a home, you have a place to sleep, so then where do you light candles? To say you should light them in your bedroom doesn't make sense. What kind of pisume nisa? The whole idea is the more people who see your Hanukkah menorah, the better. You follow me, Ellie? To light, so there it may very well be. Once you know where your home is, then the best place to light is where you eat. Because when you eat, people see. So we'll take the person in the hotel. We know where he's going to sleep that night. But in a hotel, for security reason, they don't want you to light in your room. So they set up an area near the dining room where everyone lights. Perfect. That's good. They have a guard there. Someone is watching. God forbid candles shouldn't fall over, shouldn't start a fire. That solves all problems. Yomo had the question right here in Gris. Where does he light candles? Well, if he's sleeping here, then he can light near the dining room. Where did they light Yomo in Gris? Halacha l'maisa, what did they do?
Depends where people live. Most people either light in their house.
Yeah, but they eat there. What about the
Torah Shraga students light in the dining room?
That's exactly right.
But Yomo, who doesn't eat in the dining room.
Right. No, I understand. Hey, Vanti. That anyone, the kollel that has apartments here, they light in their apartment. That's where
or
they
outside,
eat.
Or,
outside is Minig Yisrael to light outside. Lahadil b'pesumei niser einan chinami. In Eretz Yisrael, at least you see it. I don't know in America. I never saw it, but it could be in Borough Park. They light outside. Could very well be. But the Torah Shraga boys who sleep in a dorm will light in the dining room. And that's fine. In other words, I would define it as follows. Your home is defined by where you sleep. Once you define your home for that day, then it's best to light where more people can see it. And that would be where you eat, the dining room, next to the dining room, etc. All right, so Rav Menashe Klein feels going to her friend's house is not a solution because that's not her home. Even if she's going to eat there, it's only temporary. It's only chad pami. It's not that she's a regular there. And therefore, the chiyuv is on her to light where she lives, where her parents say she shouldn't light. And here, Rav Menashe Klein is very fascinating, and here you get involved already with feminism. Who says girls have to light? The truth of the matter is, the Gemara says openly, Yishu Beito, and time and again, women are obligated to light Hanukkah candles. Women were part of the Jewish people. Hemayu Baltones. Not only that, a good deal of Hanukkah is attributed to the women because one of the worst gezeirot was that the hegemon, the governor, any woman getting married, he had the first rights on her. And that he desecrated the Kedushat Yisrael, Tarat Bat Yisrael, and they were in the miracle. They were redeemed. So certainly they should be lighting candles. And he says, Yesh lefakfek im biklal haita takana al betulot benot Yisrael lahadlik neirot. He says, I'm very much in doubt whether young girls who are not married have an obligation to light Hanukkah candles. Umasha amru nashim vaday chayavot b'nei Hanukkah shnapein hayuba kohanes haynu nashim nisuot dafka o almana shekfanasa she'aleim hayta hagzeira shel tiba'el lahagmon techila. And it could be that this girl who's not married, you don't have an obligation to light Hanukkah candles. Ellie, the whole obligation is when they face the terrible prospect that before they could live with their husband, the ruler took them for the first night. So since these are married women, or almanot, who were married, Grushat as well, by the way, he doesn't mention Grushat because it wasn't that wide, but today in the year 2022, believe me, to Ellie, we find Shalayla Me'ezer Chacham Aroetan Olay, you don't open your mouth until you think what will be 1 year from now with what I'm saying. Don't correct the Rebbe, it's 2022 from the point of view of Torah Hashem Tamimah. Every word we say, think ahead 1 year. What the results. Coming back to this, so this girl is not married. She's not married. She's not chayavet. What's the problem? She can forget about it. Go to your friend's house, see the candles, make her feel shasa nisim lavoteinu, but that's it. All right. Obviously, that's not an answer that you can give to everyone. And I think Rav Menashe Klein understands it. So he struggles again, and he says as follows, what do we do about the parents? You have to listen to your parents. All right? And the Gemara in Kedushin, I don't have to tell you, the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, the stories of Kibbut Aviyim, even if they're lo aleinu senile, Alzheimer's, even if they take money and throw it on the floor, right or wrong, the beautiful Gemaras and the Gentiles who were makpid, the Kibbut Aviyim. But if parents tell you lechalel Shabbat, you don't have to listen. Right or wrong, open halacha. Here they're telling her not to light Hanukkah candles. She doesn't have to listen. Now, this question haunts us in modern times. The Baal Tshuva movement. How many times has this question come up? Do you honor your parents? Mechalalei Shabbos, Ochlei Nevelet and Treifat. I know kids, I know a family where all four siblings are from. The story is unbelievable. It's a true story. These are Talmidim of mine via the website. And the story is very simple. It's an old-time German Jewish family in America from perhaps right after the Civil War, and proud to be Reformed Jews, and they didn't assimilate. They're still Reformed Jews, and a well-to-do family, not from the New York area, and the eldest kid graduates college. It wasn't the greatest student, but he graduated finally. His parents said, here, you can take a trip around the world. So the kid, Taka, takes a trip around the world, and he's in Europe, and he says, well, I'm not that far from Israel. Let me see what the heck Israel's about. He comes to Israel, and he goes to the Kotel, and at the Kotel, he's tapped on the shoulder. Are you Jewish? Yes. You know, we can give you free room and board for a month. All you have to do is attend two classes in the morning. The rest of the day is free. The kid says, why not? P.S. He's in, I believe it's Eish, or Rosameach, could be Eish HaTera, and he doesn't leave. Family in America thinks the kid is crazy. So they send a brother to pull him out. He doesn't leave. Send a third brother to pull out the first two brothers. They don't leave. Finally, the father and mother say to their daughter, you're the only one who has seichel. You know, women have more seichel than men. It's open Gemara, bini yatei rabban Hashim. They send her to pull them out. She doesn't live. It's a true story. Now you should know, each one is here, the other three in the room, each one built a home of Torah, l'kavod u'l'tiferet. And the mother, she's widowed, her home is still not kosher, with so many children. But it's not out of anti, it's simply out of inability to the whole concept of kosher, of separate, of meat, of, it's beyond her. All her life, her parents never knew of it, she never knew of it. So, you know, you have to be mechabedi. She's happy you keep kosher. It's not she's telling you, don't keep kosher, be mechalel Shabbat. She's proud. But you have to, it's a rachmanut, but kibbut aviyim is there. So this is, and I've gotten this question in so many different variations. And a lot of it, I blame the psychologist, the psychiatrist, the psychologist. There's a whole world out there, Freud, the parents, everything is blamed on the parents. I've never yet met a parent who harmed the child on purpose. I mean, a normal Jewish parent, I've never yet met. There are people who are sick, all right, we're dealing with within the normative range. We make mistakes. My daughters can still be angry at me. I sent them to the wrong place. We didn't know the educational system in Israel. You understand? You can make mistakes. But you never made mistakes to harm. It was done inadvertently. And kibbut aviyim, I always paskin lahalacha, is there. And Rebbe Nasha Klein here is trying to say, well, it's your parents telling you l'chalal Shabbos, maybe you should light candles. Well, I don't know if this analogy is correct. The parents here are worried, this girl may be a little bit free and easy, she's going to light candles, they're worried stiff, 7,000 miles away, the house will burn down. But k'fayu hayu devarim me'olam, God have mercy on us. How many people have been killed by Shabbos platot, by Shabbos, what are you saying, how do you say it in English, a plata, a Sabbath plate that explodes. I don't have to tell you what happened in Brooklyn. I happen to know that very street where the tragedy happened. I stayed with the rabbi there, Shabbat, a number of times I stayed in the house right across the street. And, you know, accidents happen, terrible, candles, fires. Anything is possible. There was just this year something burned down. I heard it was Shabbos candles, Hanukkah candles that started the fire. So you got to understand the parents. It's not exactly Chilul Shabbos. Here, they're worried stiff. We don't have that much confidence in this particular girl. She doesn't yet have a responsible feeling for life that you develop when you're older and you're a mother, etc. So, finally, he comes up with an etzer. You got to give him credit. He doesn't stop. He comes up with an etzer. He says, you wanted to go to your girlfriend's house. You wanted to be part of her family there. Let the girl come to your house. Light the candles with the girl. You now have shnei edot, two girls who are there. And at the end of a half hour, you blow the candles out, you'll be outside the mitzvah, your parents will be happy, your parents said to you, you cannot light candles. But they didn't asa if you bring a friend. And that's what he paskins la halacha, shetikachat chervata etzla bishat hadlaka. Shekinirecha horim choshishim shelo ya'ara chas v'chalila takana u'kishiyi yom shnayim u'laika ha'gavna lo choshishu v'yazla gam ha'hakpada. And the fact that they were makpid that you can't light, but if they're two, that's different. Two can light. Vic, terrific etzah. Don't go to your girlfriend's house. Invite the girlfriend to your house. All right, these are questions that come up. Human relations, parents and children. And I have to say, my own feeling is that I've seen psychologists at work, psychiatrists at work. That's why whenever someone asks me about the psychological help, I always hope I can find someone religious. That's one requirement. And the other requirement, someone who knows their background. That's also, it's like asking a shaila in halacha. It's very important to ask a posek who knows you, your environment, your background. You all know, those of you who are lamdanim understand very well, at times there can be very big differences, b'diyavad, lachatchila, shatadchak, orchim, everything we have in Yoredeya, very, very important. Same thing in Eben Ezra, b'zman hazeh, very important. And you go to a psychologist, I would always say someone who's of Russian origins should go to someone who knows the Russian, how he grew up, what was in Russia, what was in Lithuania, what was in White Russia, what was in Latvia, what was in the Ukraine. Because you've got to remember, Russia is 16 different republics formed the Soviet Union. But to me, that's very important. But this is classic, the girl not to light candles on Hanukkah. All right, maybe they felt she should go to friends, neighbors, but Mehika Hadin, it's your house where you live, where you sleep, that determines it. Okay, now, one step further. Siman Tuf Kuf Lamed Vav. And this too is in Chelek Yud Aleph. It's a continuation. And first of all, let's see the halacha. And here we come back to something that we spoke about in past weeks. First of all, let's look at the halacha. Siman in Or Chaim, Tav Reish Ayin Bet, Tar Ab, Sif Katan Aleph. Ein Madlikin Echanaka Kodzim Shetishka Hachama, Elim Sov Shkiyato, Lo machrim v'lo makdimim. Okay, so first of all, this is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch paskins lahalacha that you're supposed to light candles with sunset. You can look in, you'll see if you press the time after plag hamincha, and lachatchila, you can't dilly-dally. You have to see that there's enough oil. If, in other words, if you light after the plug, or if you light right with sunset, not with the Tzeita Kachavim, and we spoke about this already, the Vilna Gaon felt right with sunset. You have to have enough oil in the menorah, or a candle big enough, that it will burn a half hour after Tzeita Kachavim, Ad shet chale regel min hashuk. And that half hour, the whole concept is, by a half hour after sunset, or later after Sefer Chachavim, people were no longer walking around. People were home. So here you have a portrait of the way people lived at the time of the Shulchan Aruch in his area. People did not walk around. Nighttime was made to be home. Nighttime was made for eating supper, going to sleep. A very different world than the Big Apple doesn't sleep or Tel Aviv doesn't sleep. Yerushalayim, when I came in Aliyah, people did sleep at night. Today already, we're a metropolitan city, a cosmopolitan city. We're part of the big Western world. Even in Yerushalayim, people don't sleep. Well, if that's the case, you look at the Rama in Sif Katan Bet, and the Rama says, Yesh Omrim Shebizman Hazeh Shemadlik Bifnim Eino Tzarich Lizacheh Lahadlik Kodem Shetichle Regel Min Hashuk. Bizman hazeh, we're lighting in the house, we're not lighting outside. Evidently people are living in Gullus, it's Poland, it's Russia, the place of the Ramah. plenty of anti-Semites nearby. When you're lighting in the house, people are awake yet. Kol zman, people are awake. You can still light Hanukkah candles. There still is Pirsumei Mitzvah. And this is Halacha L'maisa. You see, there's a total different reality that affects how we light Hanukkah candles. Halacha L'maisa, and you can work it out. I just touched the sources here. But you can work it out, even the Sfadim, even the Ashkenazim. Lachatchilar, it's always better to light bizman, like any mitzvah baliyotcha tachmitzena. It's always better to light bizman because basically you're not allowed to eat before you light Hanukkah candles. But halacha lemaisa, you can basically light all night as long as people are awake. And the halacha goes so far that if you look into the Mishnah Brura, Sif Katan, Yud Aleph, and that Siman, you look into the Mishnah Brura, he paskins la halacha that if you come home and your family is asleep, wake them up and light Hanukkah candles. Could you imagine? You come home, they're asleep, they already went to sleep. The day is over. No, you can wake them up, you're lighting in your house, they can hear the brachot, and you'll be yotze 100%. Kedeshe yachtzik yikitzitzein, wake them up, like kitzotam, kedeshe yuchala hadlik bebracha. So that's halacha lemaisa. We've come a long way from the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. And ain't hachinami. People are in business. People are in the Knesset. People are at work. People are shopping. We're no longer makpid. So we'll come home an hour after sunset, 2 hours after sunset, 3 hours after sunset. Something happened. We were traveling. We reached the house 2 o'clock in the morning. People are there to answer on the bracha, to see the neirot. You're allowed to bench. What's also fascinating, at the end of that siman in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama adds, "Ubelelot hacharon yadlik kamosha b'nei adam, af al pi shelo hidlik berishonah." And there he's talking about what happens if a person missed the night, didn't light? He was on nus, whatever, traveling, he never got home, it didn't work out. He was on an airplane. You missed the night. You missed. What does that mean? So the rest of the nights, you light like everyone else? What is the Shulchan Aruch telling us? It's actually the Rama. What is the Rama telling us? The truth of the matter is, if I had the Rama alone, I wouldn't understand it. But the Mishnah Brura explains. You know what the Rama is saying? You might say, since I missed the night, so I lit one candle, I missed the second night, so the third night I light two candles. I go back because I missed. I have to go in order. One, missed, two, three. Everyone else, the third night is lighting three candles. So the halacha is, you're like everyone else. You light the third night three candles. You miss the night, you miss the night. But it's the third night now. You have to end off on the eighth night. There's no such concept that you're going to be lighting on the ninth day because you missed the day and only then that you hit eight candles. And the Kemosha b'nei Adam, and the Mishnah Brura says so beautifully, Rogsa loma, Belaila shnia shtei neirot, Belaila shlishit shalosh, Velo neima, Deludidei halaila shnia hiroshana, Yadlik rakachat. And if he missed the first day, so the second day he'll say, well, this for me is the first day, I'm just beginning to light. No, you light like everybody else. Okay. So this is the halacha, this is the Shulchan Aruch, this is the psak, and Eina Chinami, very fascinating. Could very well be that if you light outside the house, like they do in many places in Israel, could very well be that, I don't know, after 11, 12 o'clock in Yerushalayim, you can't light outside. Who sees it? You're not Yotzei. It's not the place to light. Who walks by? Light in your house on the kitchen table where your children are working, where your wife is reading, where everyone is sitting around. Light in the living room. Not downstairs where no one is walking by at that time. I know that one of my neighbors lights, Dafka, it's of interest to the Kollel. There was a student here years ago, a wonderful, wonderful student, and he died young. His wife, Bezivik Sheni, remarried someone who became a Baal Tshuva through the influence of a student of mine. Very fascinating. She's the widow of my student, marrying Bezivik Sheni, and he became Frum through a student of mine, a dear, dear student. Of course, remember, I'm teaching Torah in Israel 52 years already, so it's a long period we're talking about. And he lights outside the door. All right, when you walk into the building at 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night, people see it. Imagine if he'd light outside his door on the entry floor 11 o'clock at night. I don't think anyone walks generally in my building. It's older people outside of one or two younger people. Everyone goes to sleep early. And I can know if I take the elevator up to Koma Dalet at 10 o'clock at night, my Koma, it could very well be in the morning when I come out, I'll find the elevator at Koma Dalet. No one used it during the night. So very interesting, lighting outside, beautiful. But you have to, in my opinion, you have to light earlier, at least in Yerushalayim, where people sleep at night. All right, could be with all the demonstrations, who knows? I don't want to make a general comment, considering how much when I thought there was a Seger last night. They're demonstrating at the Prime Minister's house, they're demonstrating with Lo Aleinu with the tragedy of Ahuvia, I think is the name, the boy who was killed by the police, the car crash. What we go through. All right? But this is the halacha. Now, what is the question? This is fascinating that here he's getting a question. He doesn't mention the name. L'chvod Yedidi Hayaka. He learns in a yeshiva. And this boy must come from a Hasidic background. It takes me back to that question I got from my student in the Kollel many years ago. He went to see Rebbe's Chadlakat HaNeirot, and there's the Rebbe for 1/2 hour. The half hour that you have to have the Hanukkah candles burning. The Rebbe is looking at the candles, and hundreds of Hasidim are looking at the Rebbe. There is total silence. And he asked me, what does the Rebbe see in the Hanukkah candles? And he asked the Litvak like myself, as you all know, in this classroom, every student sitting here has a beard outside of yours truly. And that he's asking me, I told him, I don't know. What do you want? The Hanukkah candles, you like honey, you sing, Mav Sua. All right, you sit down, you learn, you go back to what you're doing, you're right. I don't stay far from the Hanukkah candles. I like to see them, Pisumi Nisa, etc. But staring. This kid must come from that background, and he lights, and then he stares 1/2 hour. A message, Hasidus, taking in the aura of the Hanukkah candles. And by the way, the Talmud of mine, I might want to mention his name, it'd be a schut for him. He died young, Rabbi Yaakov Shmayahu. He was here in the Kollel, must be in the early 90s. Wonderful Talmud, Sephardic origins, was a Rav in London for quite a few years, I believe a Sephardic congregation. And his family, his wife, his children insisted they're coming back to Israel. And he came back. He came to the shir a few times. I don't know if anyone recalls. And Nebuch, he died young, and life has to go on. She remarried a wonderful human being, a wonderful Jew. Okay, so what's the problem? He stares at the candles. He's now in a Litvashi yeshiva. And the Litvashi yeshiva, I don't know what it is, Lakewood Hills, whatever, they light candles and back to learning. No sitting around staring at the Hanukkah candles to take in the Kabbalistic Hasidic aura. That is not allowed. And this poor fellow who has suffering, it's his minhag, his custom, he doesn't feel he's Yotzei Hanukkah, what should he do? And this is where he turns to the Mishnah Halachot, to Rav Menashe Klein. And he says, what is your question? Ein manichin lo leshev. It should be, we use Matan Hebrew, I believe, lashevet. Ein manichin lo leshev. Eitzel hadlokot ne'er Chanukah chatzi shah kafi min hago. Im talo lahadlik liachar haseda hagam shehu lavzman hashkiyah. And here's his question. We just saw the halacha I quoted. The Shulchan Aruch holds that you should light with shkiyah. Even the Ramah who says you can light all night, but lachatchila, light with shkiyah. And this will make him change his minhag to sit for a half hour and take in the Hanukkah lights. And Rabbi Menashe Klein quotes the Ramah and says, yes, I understand that there are many chetrim to light all night. I understand that the Ramah's psak, and he says there are sources that the Bnei Yeshiva would only light when they leave the Beit Medrash later at night. Kol zman they're learning, they continue learning. But he says, nevertheless, even if we have the Ramah, but the Ramah himself says, Latchila, Tov lizacher gam bizman hazeh, that lachatchila we should try to be careful to light right away at the proper time. And he says, your minhag to sit in front of the Hanukkah candles for a half an hour, lav hilchatahu v'ein lezeh chiyuv. And he says, it's not a halacha. I don't know where the minhag comes from. And he says, I can prove to you that it can't be a minhag that we had generations ago, because milifnim, in previous generations, shehidliku nedot bepetach beitomi bachutz, lo nireh sheyoshvu el hapetach bayit, elehinichu haneirot dolkim. And he says, let me tell you, and I can understand what he's talking about. My dear students, have you ever been in Russia during the winter? I was in Russia 3 times during the winter. 81, 85, 89. 1985 was the coldest winter they had since, I'm quoting the Russian expression, General Winter defeated Napoleon and General Winter defeated Hitler in 1942. You know what I'm talking about. Napoleon was out to conquer Russia. The logistics were beyond him. They had one of the coldest winters ever. In 42, Hitler's marching on Moscow, and it was one of the coldest winters ever. The Germans froze. They had to hold back. They couldn't fight. and 85, I functioned in Riga in 40 degrees below centigrade. I don't wish it on my worst enemies. I'm lucky to be alive. I had a miracle that Friday night, the year of Shabbos. I've spoken about it in the past. But coming back here, all right, you lit Hanukkah candles outside. Dove, that was your family's minhag in White Russia and Lithuania. They ran back inside as soon as possible. Who can stay outside in a Russian winter? And this is exactly what Rabbi Menashe Klein is saying. Lonnie, really, it doesn't appear to me that they stayed outside in Poland, in Russia, in the Ukraine, in Russia, in Lithuania, in Latvia, you can go on and on. Doesn't appear to me that they stayed outside staring at the candles in a Russian winter. And that's exactly what he paskins lahalacha, that yes, it's a nice minhag, you take in a lot more of Hanukkah. He uses the word it's rak silsul the chibuv mitzvah, it's enchanting the mitzvah, enhancing it with more. But meika hadin, light candles with the rest of the yeshiva. Go back to learning. You're now in that atmosphere, and that's what you have to do. And he says at the very end of the tshuva, and it could be that he hits upon something here. He says it could be that the looking at the candles comes from a different concept. And what are we talking about? Women, because the women were involved in the miracle, because the women were spared from the rulers who desecrated their sanctity, so Heim Hayu Baltones, and they added a minhag not to do work while the Hanukkah candles are burning. ברוך אתה אדוני מלך העולם שהכל יהיה בדברו. What does it mean not to do work while the Hanukkah candles are burning? I go along with the crowd now. I buy the pre-made oil candles, which are fabulous. They burn for 2 hours, 2.5 hours. 2.5 hours? No. That half hour that you're yotzei, that's a mitzvah. At the end of the half hour, you're permitted to have hanar from the Hanukkah candles. There's no din she'asur lishtamesh b'chem. So it's only the half hour. The women don't do malacha for that half hour. You can yell and you can shout, I want my latkes. And your wife will say to you, darling, you got another 27 minutes until I can do malacha again. So it could be, you follow me, Eli? Reb Menashe Klein is very insightful. It could be that this minhag of sitting and staring at the Hanukkah candles comes from the fact that for 1.5 hour, the women desisted from malacha. You see, there is a beautiful concept here. But halacha lemaisa, you light when everyone else does. This is just a minhag. It's not something that's an ancient minhag. And doing like the Shulchan Aruch lachatchila, even the Ramah agrees, do what the yeshiva is doing. But see, that's a fascinating question. Now, see, with women, I think I've told you more than once, this is Rosh Chodesh. See, with the feminist movement, the women want ritual. All right, my wife's generation doesn't understand it. I've said that more than once. But the women today, they don't have to churn the butter. They don't have to kasha the chicken. They're getting PhDs. They're MDs. They're atomic scientists. They're in every field that you can imagine. For my money, the whole Knesset should only be women. Men have to sit and learn Torah. Women are not obligated. They can serve in the Knesset and be a better Knesset. Take my word for it. So The women on Rosh Chodesh, Tosfos already says, the minig, they abstain from malacha. It's their holiday. And certain things until today, women don't sew in Rosh Chodesh. They have certain things that they continue until today. And this should be stressed because Rosh Chodesh has this element of the woman's festivities. So here it carries over that half hour they don't do malacha. Very fascinating. Okay, let me go one step further. Okay, let me just keep my papers in order. Okay, here it is. One step further. Aha. And here is the question that we alluded to before. This is Siman Tav Kuf Lamed Chet. Also, Chelet Yud Aleph, but Tav Kuf Lamed Chet. And this is what we alluded to before. The yeshiva bachrim who have a dormitory eat elsewhere. Where do they light Hanukkah candles? And here I'll refer you, one second, let me refer you to the source in the Shulchan Aruch. This question didn't just develop today. It's something that's been with us for many, many generations. Siman in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim Tav Reish Ayin Zayin Tar Az Sif Aleph. Achsani Shein Madlikin Alav Beveitol Tzarech Latet Pruta Labalat Habayit L'shtatefimo B'shemin Shelnea Hanukkah. And here you have it. That's what I refer to. It's based upon the Gemara and Shabbos Daf Chaf Gimel, that if you're not home, you're a guest, and no one is lighting for you in your house, and your guest where you're staying is going to light Hanukkah candles, so you have to share with him in the Hanukkah candles. You have to contribute a pruta, a coin, so you're a partial owner. And then the halacha continues, v'yim yesh lo petach patuach latzmo, tzarich lahadlik bepitcho, af al pi shot habayet eina miyuchad ela l'shena, v'hu ochel al shulchan balet habayet. And very interesting, if he sleeps elsewhere and he has his own entrance, he has the light outside his entrance to where he sleeps. So why? Why can't he be yotzei with the balabayat? Why can't he be yotzei in the balabayat's house? So you look into the Mishnah Brura, it's chshash, that really me'ikim hadin, he can be yotzei with the balabayat. He's only a guest, but if he has his own entrance and there are no Hanukkah candles there, people will say, oi, he's a guy, he's a shegetz, he's a neusvaf, he's a trumpenik, he's a pushtak, he's not lighting Hanukkah candles. So it's mipnei hachshash, light outside your petach. Okay, so here you see there's a concept in the halacha that if everyone else has Hanukkah candles in their window, you live in a big apartment building in Yerushalayim, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, and you don't have Hanukkah candles outside you in the window facing the street, people will be choshesh. So when anyone would ask me a shaila, where should I light, on my kitchen table or on the window? I would say, first of all, if people can see from the street, lighten your window. It's Pisume Nisa. Secondly, if you claim you're up so high, people don't see from the street, but tell me, do your neighbors light? From afar they'll see there is something lit, not lit. If everyone is lighting in their windows, even though you say it's a bigger Pisume Nisa on your kitchen table, lighten your windows. And that's what it means here, Petach Patuach. But what do you see here? And this is what's important, that where do you light, where you eat. That is most important. The whole concept of lighting where you sleep is only if there's an entrance and there's a chashash that people will think you didn't light. But once you're staying at your friend's house, once you're in an achsanya, then it's best to light with the family in the dining room where everyone is eating. You've determined this is your habitation for that night. This is your habitat. This is where you are. This is your home where you sleep. You're not budging. All right? Once that's determined, better to light where you eat, where there's pirsume nisa. Look into the Mishnah Brura, you'll see that I'm absolutely correct. The petach patuach is only a chash, but if you're eating with the balabas and where you sleep is totally separate and doesn't have its own entrance, you have to light where you eat. That's the Ramah, exactly Sif Katan Aleph. The Yesh Omrim Shebizman Hazeh Shen Madlikin Bifnim Mamash Yadlik B'makom She'ochel V'chein Nohagu. Bizman Hazeh, we don't light outside, we light inside. What does inside mean? The greater Pesumenes, where you eat, could even be on the kitchen table. I light facing the Valley of the Cross. Malka says, who sees? I say, all right, you may be right that I'd be better off lighting on the kitchen table. But on where we light, we can see from in the house, and people at least from afar can see there's some candle lit. It's Hanukkah. So this question he gets, this yeshiva boy, Habacharim sholchlim v'yishenim v'yeshiva, heichen madlikin, where do they light? Beveit hafshil u'bamakom lina. Where do they light? Where they eat, the dining room, like in Gerus, there's this big dining room, or do they light a number of feet away in a different building, the building in which they sleep? And he quotes the exact Shulchan Aruch we quoted, and he says, La halacha could very well be that they have to light where they sleep. That is their main habitat. That's where they stay. But nevertheless, he says, people don't want to light candles and leave them. Secondly, the Ramah says, Bizman Hazeh, where we light indoors, much more important to light where you eat. And this is the minhag today, and I told the Bachurei Yeshiva that if they can light where they eat, absolutely, this is the best thing to do. And he goes even so far, O jadliku beveit ha-tafshil, o beveit ha-medrash, that they can light even in the beit ha-medrash, pirsumei nisa, it's where they're living now, they're learning, this is where they're sleeping at night, and it paskins la halacha, that they would be yotzei even in the Beit HaMedrash. Halacha l'maisa, I don't know, did you ever see people lighting in the Beit Medrash? You light when you daven, there is a minhag to light. Yomo, what do you say? Do they light in the Beit Medrash? Well, we...
Light this Medrash for Tzibur.
Well, excuse me?
In Beit Medrash for light for Tzibur.
No, I understand, they light where they daven, there is that you do. But I've never yet seen that they light. Now, I'm trying to think back to why you. No, they would light.
But the Medrash, where people sleep there.
People sleep in the Medrash.
And they lit on the entrance to the Medrash.
They lit light on the entrance. But he's talking here already inside, not the outside. But that's what he paskins la halacha, that to light better. You see, it's... here with the yeshiva, I'll tell you, it's not so simple in the sense, where do they spend most of their time? And the truth is that the Beis Medrash is really where they spend most of their time. Eating is very secondary. Sleeping, of course, you're asleep. You're not awake. There's no bisuminisa when you're asleep. But you could make a case that lighting in the Beit Medrash is even better than lighting in the outside or inside the dining area. But this is, these halachas, no matter where you light, you'll be yotzei. In other words, halacha lamaisa, you can always guess what's better, but yotzei, you will be yotzei no matter where you light. Okay, we have one more question to deal with on Hanukkah candles. And that gets us involved in the whole problem of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. I can give you a simple example that very fascinating. I remember when I was a kid, I first touched upon this. Reb Moshe Bick of Borough Park asked Reb Moshe Feinstein, someone in Borough Park owns a factory in Israel. Give you an example. Some of you from Katamon know that the Hochstein family, Ephraim Hochstein, was just elected the representative of the Katamon area on the local Vod. The Hochstein family, his grandfather, I trust I'm not skipping a generation, it's his grandfather, Yiret Tzadik, he, his wife, they lived on the Upper West Side. When the State of Israel was formed, he built a pipe factory in Israel, a factory to manufacture pipes. That was the family business from Belgium, from Europe. And that factory provided work for 100 immigrants from Arab countries, Jewish immigrants running away from Arab countries, people who didn't have advanced skills, but they were taught how to make pipes. And this man ran that factory, that Mastercraft, it was called Mastercraft Pipes, so that Jews would have panasa in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know if he ever made money out of it, but Jews should have panasa. That's the Hochstein family. So now let me ask a question. Mr. Hochstein lives on the Upper West Side. Later they come in Aliyah, but at that point in the 1950s, they live on the Upper West Side. Second day Yontif, he's going to shul, he's not doing malacha, he's davening musaf, and his pipe factory is functioning, lekavod l'tiferet in Eretz Yisrael. Everyone is going to work. Second day Yontif, who has a second day Yontif here? And this was the shaila that Reb Moshe got from Reb Moshe Bick. Someone in Borough Park owns a factory in Israel, and it's open on Yontif Sheni. Everyone works on Yontif Sheni. The factory can employ only Hasidim, but the owner of the factory is in Borough Park in Brooklyn in New York, and Ribbono Shel Olam, he is davening musaf. He is making kiddush. He is observing yontif b'kedusha v'tara, and his factory is functioning in Israel. And that was the shaila of Moshe God. And now, when you start to translate that shaila, Pesach, you have 101 shailas. You come from Israel. You're in Borough Park. You're there for the Chag. You sold your chametz in Israel. You're eating a chametz stick breakfast, Erev Pesach, 7 o'clock in the morning. Back in Israel, everything is sold. Chametz is asa. Could even be already the oraita. It's afternoon. It's wow. Korban Pesach can be brought already. The shaila repeats itself. What about Hanukkah candles? You told your wife, light candles for me in Israel. My house should be lit up. I should be yotzei candle lighting. And here she's lighting candles Motzei Shabbos. And for you, you haven't yet even daven mincha of Shabbat. You follow? And this shaila repeats itself time and again. One other coming attraction. From here we go into Megillah reading. my dear students, World War III. Do you remember or not Rabbi Schachter versus Rabbi Schachter? Schachter with a second H, Schachter without the second H. Rabbi Tzvi Schachter, Reb Heschel versus Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Yosef J.J. Schachter. The issue of Torah Umada that shook up the world on two tremendous issues. Why the Rav left Poland, Warsaw, to go to college in Berlin. And the second issue, whether women can make their own prayer group and a woman can read the Megillah for the rest of the women. And by the way, in modern times, you can take it even one further. Can the women read the Megillah for men? You follow? All right. The world was shaking. That issue of Torah Mada, I remember it like yesterday. We hit it bullseye next Sunday, Bezrat Hanotein Layov Koach. So to reiterate, we dealt with some more interesting questions from Hanukkah. Our friend in jail, the girl whose parents went to Israel and ordered her not to light candles, the staring at the Hanukkah menorah for a half hour, or lighting with the rest of the yeshiva. Very fascinating what he says, when it could be the minig began, because for a half hour, women didn't do work, and perhaps sat and stared at the Hanukkah menorah. Very fascinating theory on his part. The whole question of the yeshiva bacha, when does he light Hanukkah candles, where does he light the dormitory, where he eats, the Beit Medrash, life is life, and Chaselet and Shivat are a reflection of life. Yisrat Hashem tomorrow, all right, tomorrow, heavyweight, heavyweight. We pick up where we left off, and we sail into Teirah V'das. But be here for the introductory part, where I show you the problem and look forward to the day that in Torah V'das they will one day be giving a lecture on Yeshiva University. Okay, in a positive fashion, not a negative one, as you will see tomorrow. I want to mention that we have another miracle as part of what Netanyahu and Trump, or Trump and Netanyahu, have established. The Arab world, I don't know if you're up to date, but in Morocco, they were able to get a get from someone in jail there. This is a Jew who lived in Israel, got into trouble here, ran away to Morocco, and got into trouble in Morocco. When a person lives crooked, it becomes part of his way of life. And he had a wife here who was an aguna. And do you know that Morocco agreed that a Rav from Israel can come and work out the get? But they said, due to the corona, they'll only allow one person into jail to get to do the get. So obviously all he can do is get an authorization. And do you know when the Rav gets to the jail, the head of the jail says, where are your two other dayanim? You need three to do the get. So he says, well, the authority said there's a problem with corona. The head of the jail said, you get two other dayanim, I will let them all in. And they got a get written in Morocco, delivered in Israel. They were able to lahatir an aguna. And you can't put a price on that. If you recall my lectures of 40 years ago on aguna, do you know that, what does the Bach say? Chol hamatir aguna achat, kilu bana achat mechurvat Yerushalayim. I also want to mention, this is on Satna, you can get this, it's from Tablet Magazine. Jack, I don't comprehend what you're talking about. He almost says it makes sense, but this is many pages. It's not going to help. A wonderful article, The Satma Way of Life and Death, used to be our way too. It's a very insightful article, positive towards Satma Chassidut. This is from my student who's a Yankee fan. He'll be here tomorrow. It's the best Yankees by numbers from 1 to 99. This is an article that I highly recommend. I hope that Makar Rishon is online. It's an article that appeared in last week, last Friday, not this Friday, a week before, Do You Can? It's their magazine section. It's She'ela Legitimatit. It deals with people who have left the Haredi world. And it's all about a Sephardic individual who learned in Hebron Yeshiva and then ran away to America, running away from his religion. And his father's a Chaver Knesset, and he's opened up a Nachla Ad. His father's a Shas Chaver Knesset, Yitzchak Kohen. This is Yehuda Kohen. It's a fabulous article. It's a must read for anyone who will be in Chinuch. He's opened up Nachlaot, a Bayit Patuach for yeshiva boys and girls who have left the Hasidic world, etc., and the Litvisha world and the Shas world, where they have less of it, but they still have the problem. And Lekarevotam, and you'll see we of Yeshiva University have a tremendous responsibility to show the world that one can be a Ben Torah, Talmud Chacham, totally devoted, go to university, have a degree, make a living in Kavod, and remain a Torah Jew 100%. Finally, a gift for Ellie, 2 volumes given out at Rami Levi, one on Shabbat, one on Tarat Mishpacha. Beautiful, beautiful volumes. I don't think any store in America gives this out free, filled with Shas Paiskim inside Hashkafa. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. Mori, open it up.
The recording has stopped.
Any questions?
Rebbe?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay, well, 2 things. One, before I get to the president, if Hadlakas Neros is like Rosh Chodesh, then why wouldn't the ladies be able to do the latkes? It's not that type of malacha, is it?
No, you're confused. You're absolutely right. But I didn't say it's the same. I say the minute bears resemblance, they abstain. But evidently with Hanukkah candles, which is only a half hour, they abstain from any malacha. You follow? Because it's only a half hour. Rosh Chodesh, they abstain 1 day or 2 days, complete from one type of malacha. But the latkes would have to wait. Check it out. Check it out if you know any women who have that minhag. But it's very interesting because that could explain why people started staring at the Hanukkah candles for half an hour. You follow? It's fabulous. It's interesting. It has to be researched. I have no way of researching it. In my world, no one abstains a half hour, looks, etc. My wife doesn't make latkes, but that's for a different reason. The oil is not healthy for you. So she does away with latkes. But I sneak in sufganiyot. People give me gifts. I have sufganiyot, Baruch Hashem. I'm yotzei, not like Yom Ha'atzmaut, where I don't have a mango. And my grandchildren think it's been an oisvaf that you're not makayim a mango. But the truth is, when the children invite us, we do go, and we join in the feast like everyone else. Yes.
You mentioned Rabbi Honig. Rabbi Honig's son, Rabbi Yaakov Honig, was the first full-time federal prison Jewish chaplain. It was there for 30 years. He's still he's my endorsing agent. He's the chairman of the RCA's Federal Prison Commission. He set up a lot of the standards for the free exercise of religion for Jewish inmates, and he's still consulted.
He can't be a youngster if he's Sidney B. Honig's son. Is it son or a grandson?
His son.
How old is he? Has to be.
He's retired already.
He has to be in my age bracket because Sidney B. Honig was.
I think he's younger.
Younger, I must. Because there was a brother who was a chaplain, and he died. He died young. That brother was a chaplain in the Air Force, I believe. They give an award for an outstanding chaplain, and it's named in his memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's
his older brother.
Right. That's an older brother. It's a terrific family. The Honigs, the Drazens. Mrs. Celia Drazen, Rebbetzin Drazen, was a Honig. That was a brother of the Professor Honig, Sidney B. Honig. They're a terrific family.
Now, we're getting in prison. I think Rabbi Honig did it get in Brooklyn. And I, some years ago, here in Chicago at the high-rise detention center I work at, I used to be at the FCI, the Federal Correctional Institution in Fort Dix. But here, I brought in the Beis Din, Rav Schwartz Hatzal, and the Beis Din, and the Sofer, and they did the authorization and the Kenyan of the Sofer's material. They decided to actually finish, I mean, they wrote the get afterwards when they left.
Right.
It was it took some doing with memos to get them in, etc.
Okay, but this was an achievement in Morocco to send in a Bei Kol HaKavod. Listen, what's happened is, in my humble opinion, the Arab world is coming to the conclusion that we're here to stay. Once they come to that conclusion, why not take advantage of the Jewish state, of the Jewish mind? And the truth is, we're cousins, Be'ezrat Hashem, Yishmael, and Yitzchak. What are we talking about? Bnei Avraham. We're cousins, so nikaveh letov. Yeah, Mark, what do you want to say?
Yeah, a couple of things. You asked about in Grus. When I was in Grus, I lit outside. I bought one of those little chimney things.
Right.
And kept the doors as closed as I could, so a rock would see you.
Wouldn't knock it out.
Some mitzvah, so the way I was lighting it would stay with the rock would see you. And I lit it on the left side, the left mezuzah, within an epoch, so it was... Since it was within a tefach, I looked like the grub from right to left.
Uh-huh. All right, that's...
The right near was there.
You're touching upon...
What Rabbi Nasha Klein said in the Shutim might be an asmachta to what I said years ago when people were lighting electric menorahs. And even if it's plugged in, where it's definitely not hadlaka or some mitzvah, I said there still could be a kiyum of a person named Niso, and people were ridiculing it, saying that if it's in all the windows, I think there's still person named Niso going on. And what he said is that even if they don't have the kiyum of Ner Chanukah, they still get the person named Niso. Perhaps there's... That's a riot to what I did,
Baruch Givanti. So that's what I said in class. That's what I said earlier. That even on a plane, if you could light something that people realize is a Hanukkah reference, there might be a kiyum of pisa mi mitzvah.
Yeah, but that was an actual one where you could be yotzei on it. This is one where you can't be yotzei on it. A few there, it would seem that there might be a kiyum. As far as the shutim again, when Rabbi Nasha Klein said the girl bringing the into the house and talking about kibud of va'im, did he mean that she should tell her parents or not tell her parents what she did? Because if she tells them, they might very well have said they weren't medayek, that she couldn't light alone, but it's okay to light with somebody else.
He doesn't touch upon that point, but I would get that if the parents hear in retrospect, they won't be upset because the proof is the building didn't burn down. The girls were there and everything worked out okay. That's my guess, my hunch.
When you were in Riga, it was minus 40 Fahrenheit. Minus 40 Fahrenheit is minus 40 Celsius. That's where they crossed.
Uh-huh. But we knew there it was Celsius. But what you say may be correct, but I can tell you it was freezing, sheba freezing. And that's what happened when I got back to the hotel, that the communist empire, everything in the hotels and in the homes and the big cities at least was very warm. They gave tremendous amount of heat. Heat was given by central places, and in, I remember in Moscow where they could, where you had a tremendous building that's job was just to provide heat for 100 miles around, and they got back to the hotel. It was Erev Shabbos, and I take a bath for Shabbos, and the water was burning. There was no cold water. And I could have fainted in the water. I would have lower lay, don't use the word, I would have drowned. By a miracle, I held on to the sign and lifted myself up, and I was totally faint. And I told Malka I must lie down, told her what happened, and you light Shabbos candles. I laid down, and I woke up about a half hour later. I was fine. And doctors explained to me that the difference in heat, when you come from such a cold climate and suddenly burning that no hot cold water, this was the nicest hotel, but by communist standards, it was 100 years behind the Western world at that time. And ani modela kadosh baruch hu hitzilat nafshi. Okay, but leave that.
Okay, one other thing, two parts. Where he said to wake up the other people in the house,
right.
First to Meinisa.
Right.
Number one, if it's a child coming in and the people who have to wake up include his parents, does that apply? And number two, why did he have to wake them up when there is a psak that if you live alone, there's enough person and you saw on your own?
First of all, Reb Menashe Klein doesn't mention that psak, but I would say what you're saying, Pisume Nisar on your own, is when you light at the normal time. So you're doing what every Jew has to do. You're called upon to light candles, you make a bracha, it's the normal time at Shkia. I don't believe at 3 in the morning we can tell a single person, light and don't wake anybody up. Where's the Pisume Nisa? He's lighting already a bidiyavet up, but he doesn't discuss it. As far as coming into the house and waking them up, I believe I quoted the Mishnah Brura to you. That was not Reb Menashe Klein. So the Mishnah Brura doesn't make any distinction, but what you say is interesting. If he's a katan, he shouldn't wake his parents up, that's for sure. I would agree with you. He's not chayiv, he's can light without a bracha. But the Mishnah Brura, look into the source I gave
you. There's many of kibbutz for older siblings as well. So.
I wouldn't overstate the case. There's kibbutz for an older brother, could be, correct. But that's a different story, your siblings. But parents are parents, ain't a chinami. It's I would agree with you that in that case he shouldn't wake them up. Okay, we have to clean out the room. I want to. Jack. Yeah.
In the tshuva about the single girl, the parents are in Israel.
Yeah.
I believe you added that she should blow out the candles, and I looked in the tshuva. I couldn't see that.
At the end of a half hour, no. If I had, I said I would advise them at the end of the half hour. Blow out the, in other words, don't let it, if your parents are so makpid, don't let it burn longer than they should be burning. But it could be I added it. Could be he doesn't say it. No, okay, I added it. But to me it's halachic common sense. I want to thank you very much for honoring me with your presence. We should only have v'sora tovat until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Okay. Yomo?
Rabbi, do you have a makor that specifically you can get hana from candles after a half hour?
That's
if they were lit with Shem Mitzvah.
Yeah, you can blow them out. No. Shem Mitzvah's only a half hour. The whole, if oil is left over beyond the half hour, there's no Kedusha to it. But if it's oil that you were using l'shem mitzvah, then you have a problem how you dispose of it. But that's all over the place. Halacha l'maisa, Reb Menashe Klein says it many times. Blow it at the end of the half hour, you can blow it out. The same
and
thing.
After you use it, there's still oil, and you fill up for the next day. Should you dafka use new oil?
You can use the old oil. What's the problem?
Okay.
What's the problem? Avada. That's what's so beautiful about these prearranged candles, that you don't have to do anything. The oil is there, you just have to light it. It's a pleasure. Do you have it in New York? Do they have all these prearranged?
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
And where do they make it? They make it in New York or they import it from Israel?
In Muncie.
They make it in Muncie?
Well, one of the companies is based in Muncie, but they get it from Arts too.
Yeah, of course, I would imagine.
There are about five different brands. Some are more liquid, some aren't.
Right, exactly. So here it's the same when you walk into Osherad before you get into the store. There are thousands piled up different with wicks, without wicks, 2 hours, an hour and a half. It's unbelievable.
I try to do some Ishlad with myself,
No, when I came in Aliyah, I remember there was a bakery on Rehov Mordechai Ben Hillel, and the lady, one of the owners, she would give wicks out, L'Shem Mitzvah. She was Tzadeket, and she would insist, take light, you light with oil. And today all that is gone, everything is bought, and you have it all waiting for you. All right, I got to clean out of here because the life has to go on here, and I'm knocked out of the room very, very shortly.
Okay. That's
thanks. So, Chitzvah Rabbi Miller today, I believe. Mm-hmm.